Hello and welcome to The Media Show. I'm Brenda Power, and on today's episode, Mary Raftery's legacy and why we need to resource investigative journalism.
It's a real investment in time and money to allow journalists to get out on the ground and go talk to people and find stories.
RTE's Kevin Backhurst on rebuilding public trust a year after the Father Reynolds report.
Trust is a hard and valuable treasure to have. You start again every day earning the trust of the audience, and you can only earn that by doing top quality journalism and hard-hitting journalism.
And why one community radio station in the capital has made broadcasting history.
We speak in Irish, we present shows in Irish, but we're not talking about Irish the whole time. It just shows that it is a modern language and it's not maybe a dead language.
But first,
what happened to the Dowlers, to the McCanns, to Christopher Jeffreys, and to many other innocent people who never sought the limelight, was utterly despicable. We commissioned the Leveson inquiry, we initiated these all-party discussions, precisely because we wanted to build a new system of press regulation in our country.
That was British Prime Minister David Cameron in the House of Commons in March, announcing the Royal Charter, which will impose new penalties and constraints on the British press following the devastating findings of the Leveson inquiry. The Charter received cross-party backing and was welcomed by the victims of the press abuses exposed by Leveson, including the family of the murdered girl Millie Dowler, whose phone was hacked by the News of the World, the Murdoch title closed down by the scandal. The Charter imposes potential fines of up to £1 million on erring publishers and requires them to issue immediate apologies. But it has been rejected by the newspaper sector itself, which has proposed its own regulator, saying the government's version would erode press freedom and give politicians far too much control. Now, given the press backlash, Cameron's government last week postponed moving the Royal Charter forward. We've been talking to two media leaders from opposite ends of the Fleet Street spectrum. Maggie Brown of The Guardian and Gito Harry of News International, the Murdoch empire which was at the centre of the abuses documented by Leveson, on why newspapers are united in opposing Cameron's charter.
I think that David Cameron finds himself as Prime Minister in quite a difficult position. Whether the press themselves can say we won't join this organisation government are putting forward, we will just have to see. It's an act of defiance, really, by the newspaper industry. I have to say my own view is that I'm quite relieved, actually, that the press is taking this line, because I was concerned about the deal, which was cooked up very, very rapidly and is, in fact, a deal which, in the final stages, the newspaper industry was locked out of. And so that kind of very hurried and kind of rather brutal conclusion is not really, I think, the way to expect to produce a solution which is bought into by all the parties, especially the parties that are going to be regulating.
I believe, with the vast majority of the newspaper industry these days, that it is not appropriate to leave a free, independent press in a mature democracy at the mercy of politicians. And unfortunately, what has emerged from Parliament would do just that. And that's why the industry has now come up with its own proposals for an alternative Royal Charter that delivers pretty much everything that Lord Justice Leveson had envisaged, that would command the confidence of the public, that would not be a burden on the taxpayer, that could be set up by the end of this summer. And I would hope that this alternative Royal Charter is allowed a chance to fly.
Now, critics of the Charter, including Emily Bell of Columbia University, have argued that the proposed regulation is already out of date. It doesn't cover online-only news sites. I asked Maggie Brown and Gito Harry if all media, broadcast, print and online, should be regulated together.
Well, that's a dangerous area, really, for papers, because, of course, they are partial. They're not in the UK under the same statutory regulation as broadcasting, which certainly in the UK is required to be impartial on major matters of politics and social affairs. So newspapers or products which are generated via the newspapers are in the area of the partial. That's why, if you are a journalist like myself, you very often find yourself being phoned up by, say, the BBC to say the things on air which its impartial reporters and specialists really can't say. So we can give an opinion. And that opinion is kind of like the salt and pepper of life. It does actually spice content up. So I think newspapers really need to cling to their freedom of expression and their ability to be partial.
I spent 18 years of my career in the BBC, which is probably among the most highly regulated media in the world. quite rightly they demand accuracy, quite rightly they demand non-political bias. But you can still do very hard-hitting, engaging journalism. But we also need journalists who are out there who are freer from those burdens. We need newspapers because newspapers can campaign relentlessly on issues, social issues, political issues. They can actually not only balance opinions, but they can take a stance. And we need that as well. That's healthy. And I would hate to see a regulator shift the power either to judges or to politicians or to the great and the good to decide what is worthy of being discussed and campaigned upon and talked about, rather than trust the professional journalists to do that themselves.
And that was Gito Harry of News International and earlier Maggie Brown of The Guardian, both singing from the same hymn sheet on the special case for press regulation.
Radio Nalifa, Quishle Nagara.
A small community station broadcasting in the Irish language from the capital city made history recently when it was named Radio Station of the Year in the prestigious Celtic Media Festival in Swansea. It's the first time in the festival's 34-year history that a community station has picked up the award, and it is a watershed in the story of Radio Nalifa and its largely volunteer broadcasters. Our reporter, Caitney Clary, paid the station a visit this week.
Well, Radio Nalifa was established in 1993 to provide an all-Irish radio service to the Greater Dublin area. And to this day, in the Republic of Ireland, there are only two fully licensed all-Irish language radio stations. But Radio Nalifa is, I suppose, geared more towards an urban audience, possibly a slightly younger audience. And one of the things which the station wanted to do from the beginning was to be fairly revolutionary, to not be associated, I suppose, with the old cultural baggage that sometimes goes with the Irish language. I'm Muir Shofinuch, I'm the station manager. We operate with three full-time staff. We have a technician, Fergal Sachs, and our programme coordinator, Cian McCartick. As well as that, we have one part-time staff member, the Muir Dera Seachtainne, or weekend steward. Everyone else in the station takes part on a voluntary basis.
Do you go to Radio Nalifa? I love volunteering here because I think the atmosphere is just brilliant and everyone's so involved and energetic and we're all kind of doing the same thing, so everyone can kind of help each other out in different aspects. I'm Helena King and I've been working with Radio Nalifa for almost 2 years now. I suppose I've always wanted to come here more so than anywhere else because of the Irish language. It's such a unique thing and it's special to so many people who speak it that it's a great opportunity to be able to use it.
I'm Cian McCorrig and I work at Radio Nalifa radio station in Dublin as the programme coordinator. So my day starts at about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock and I come in to research items for the spoken word content that's going to be going out throughout the day on the show. So I present a show every day at 2 o'clock called Beoig a Do. So that would be the first thing to get sorted. We have live interviews with politicians, musicians. It's kind of a mixed bag type show. And as well as that, we'd be working towards the evening time, booking guests for our current affairs and arts programmes as well. To get people to speak Irish on air is one thing, but actually find the Irish speaker in the first place is another thing. But luckily, Twitter and Facebook have been very helpful for us. For example, when the awful tragedy happened in Boston recently at the Marathon, through Twitter we were able to find Irish speakers who were living in Boston, so it's kind of opened up a whole new world of finding people and connecting people, and people seem to find each other a lot easier, let's say, through Twitter now and the amount of people who tweet in Irish.
Hi, I'm Fergal Sachs. I'm the technician here in Radio Nalifa. It's a great job. I get to come in to work every day and meet different people, all of them really enthusiastic about what they do. Some of them really enthusiastic about the Irish, more of them really enthusiastic about just having an opportunity to go somewhere where they can chat to people in Irish, all really, really into it. They're doing it for nothing. They're volunteering. There's, 120 people volunteering every week.
What I think the people who established Radio Nalifa were trying to do was establish a radio service which would provide an urban, city-focused radio service through Irish, two people who lived in Dublin and spoke Irish. As far as I'm aware, there are more people who speak Irish daily outside of the education system living in Dublin than there are in all of the Gaeltacht regions combined.
I like the way in Radio and Liffa we speak in Irish, we present shows in Irish, but we're not talking about Irish the whole time. We're doing international news stories, we're doing music stories, talking about plays, talking about anything. Just shows that it is a modern language and it's not maybe a dead language.
We were simply over the moon when we won the Radio Station of the Year at the Celtic Media Awards. To think that we can compete and even win over the likes of RTE Radio Na Gaeltachta, which receives €10 million funding compared to our relatively meagre €200,000 a year grant. So we're hugely proud of the achievement.
Kate McClary reporting there.
It's 6-1, RTE News with Brian Dobson and Sharon Niviolan.
A significant failure of managerial and editorial controls. The BAI's assessment of RTE's Mission to Pray programme. RTE has fined €200,000.
I think it's a very difficult report for RTE. It's a very difficult day for RTE and for everyone who believes in the standards of journalism that we've applied in RTE over decades.
That's RTE News, and the RTE Director General Noel Curran a year ago responding to the BAI report on the Primetime Investigates Father Reynolds programme, which cost RTE dearly, not just financially, but also in terms of public trust. The subsequent inquiry into the frontline presidential debate underscored the editorial problems for RTE News and Current Affairs. Since then, there's been a range of editorial and systems changes, including the appointment last July of BBC newsman Kevin Backhurst as the managing director of the news division. Kevin, what's changed?
You know, a lot of work had been done before I arrived, and there's been a lot done since I came in terms of, first of all, my very presence here is part of it. There are a number of new people in news and current affairs in the management positions. There's a number of new guidelines we brought in. We enforce them very rigorously. And there's a number of new procedures in terms of, particularly in terms of investigative journalism.
So, Kevin, a year on then, and almost a year for you into the job, do you think public trust is on the way to being restored?
Well, I hope so, yes. I mean, you know, it's inevitable when you have a high-profile mistake or two high-profile mistakes like the ones we had, there will be a dent in public trust. And that's right, and that's to be expected. There was a dent, but even then, RTE's levels of trust remained at a very high level. And I think that is a result of years of building public trust in what we do and in our reporting and so on. And interestingly, levels of public trust and support in RTE are back up to the levels seen before the problems on Primetime Investigates and the presidential debate. But, you know, I've no doubt, and I think everyone who works, you know, in RTE News and Current Affairs has absolutely no doubt, trust is a hard and valuable treasure to have. And, you know, we go in every day knowing that you start again every day earning the trust of the audience, and you can only earn that by doing top quality journalism and hard-hitting journalism.
And the Primetime brand would have built up a lot of trust over the years. You clearly didn't feel it was fatally dented by the Reynolds affair and the Tweetgate affair, particularly because you stuck with the brand.
I feel that over the years, Primetime has got a very proud history of very good journalism and certainly has earned trust over the years. Did make one serious mistake, but I felt it was better consolidated around a well-known brand that still wins big audiences three nights a week on RTE and has a reputation over the years for doing some very good journalism. So that was what we decided to do, and I think that's paid off. And I felt it was the right thing to concentrate our current affairs journalism, and you know, this is working with Dave Nally as the new head of current affairs, to concentrate our journalism and bring the very best talent on board. So, you know, with Miriam and Pat and Claire Byrne joining the team, and George Lee as well, you know, so bringing some of the biggest and best current affairs journalists we have under the single banner and working with them together.
Was there any trepidation about venturing back into the investigative arena?
Not from me. No, I think there was appetite and desire to get back in and show that we're still doing it and we can do it properly and we'll hold people to account.
Now, I know you launched your new investigative strand a few weeks ago. Would it be fair to say that investigative journalism in RTE is operating under new restraints post-Reynolds?
I wouldn't say new restraints. There are definitely, it's operating within new guidelines, and that's partly to try and ensure we don't make any of the same sort of mistakes we made before. And the key thing is to find the balance where you have those guidelines to try and avoid any mistake that is humanly possible to avoid, but where you still enable RTE to do proper and profound investigative journalism, because it's a really important part of what we do, and it's an important part of Irish journalism.
Now, one of the things that investigative reporters rely on is editorial support and editorial leadership. I know it was before your time, but can reporters rely on that leadership in future?
Yes, absolutely. People can rely on my support. You know, I will support them fully so long as they stick to the job, stick to the guidelines, and I absolutely will support journalists who are doing their job and doing the journalism. There is another side to that deal, and that is that they do the job in a proper way and according to the guidelines now, which are very clear to them.
Now, since you took over, there have been some criticisms of RTÉ's handling of certain news stories. For instance, the coverage of the late night sitting for the promissory note deal, the coverage of Adrian Donoghue's murder, the Detective Garda, the amount of people and the cost of the papal election coverage. How would you assess your own performance so far?
Look, I always question my own performance. I think that's a good thing to do. And I don't so much think so on Adrian Donoghue, where I didn't really see any questioning about our coverage on that. I mean, yes, there were some on the prom note night, and there were some questions asked about the number of people we sent to Rome for the Pope and the amount of money we spent on it. Of course, I'll always go back and question what we've done and think, have we done the right things and are there lessons we learn? I think you should do that. I hope I'm doing a decent job. You know, I think RTÉ News and Current Affairs is overall performing very well. I think, you know, on those particular stories, as I said publicly on the Pope story, I think it was a really important story globally. It was a very important story for many people here in Ireland. And to provide world-class coverage on major news stories is something we should be aspiring to do. And it's not a cheap thing to do. We examined the number of people we sent on that, what their roles were. I know for a fact they all worked extremely hard. They did a lot of coverage across many outlets and many platforms. And when I compared the cost with the cost of the previous change of Pope, I'm pleased to say we made substantial savings on that, both in terms of numbers and the amount of money we spent on it. On the prom note night, again, I've gone back and looked at it. I mean, it was a tricky one all evening that evening. The event was due to be between 6 and 7, then it was completely off, then it was back on, but there was no timing, then it drifted. We did actually a lot of coverage. There was extensive coverage on the 6-1 and the 9 o'clock news. There was then an extended late debate on RTÉ Radio. There was extensive web coverage and coverage on News Now. And then when the actual announcement did happen, near to midnight, we took it live on RTÉ1. So, you know, I think we can overstate possibly that we didn't do enough coverage on it. There was a huge amount. And the next day there was a massive amount of coverage when we actually had the story rather than sitting not knowing if the story was going to happen or not. You know, I think when you judge it in hindsight, if I'd known it was definitely going to happen at 20 to midnight, I might have done things differently. But we were dealing with a moving target, so, and we didn't have a programme scheduled to go on air. And I think the thing is, if you take a decision to put a programme on air not knowing if the story is going to happen or not, you know, you're making a statement of a different kind. And I'm still not sure that would have been the right thing to put a prime time on when we weren't even clear whether the story was actually going to happen that evening or not.
Now, this time last year, the then acting head of news, Cillian De Pryor, was in defending the closure of the London office, which, of course, Brian O'Connell subsequently denounced and called Ryanair journalism and said was a betrayal of RTÉ's public service objectives. Given the intensity of the debate over the UK's possible withdrawal from the EU, major trading partner, would you say that was the right decision?
Well, I think it was definitely the right decision at the time. I've spoken to Cillian about it and I've spoken to Noel Curran about it. The London Bureau was based in a very expensive premises in Millbank, which cost us a huge amount of money. And you know, was it producing the amount of coverage that the money warranted at the time? I'm not sure it was, to be honest. I think at the time it was probably the right decision. I think, you know, it's the Director General has said publicly, and he and I have agreed on this, it's a decision that we're constantly keeping under review because it is an important story for our audience here. There's a lot of Irish people in the UK, apart from anything else. And then we've got potentially the British general election, followed by potentially a British vote on whether to leave the EU or not coming up, potentially a vote on Scottish independence. You're right, there's a lot of good stories come out there. So, you know, I think we'll keep it under review. We'll have to weigh that up with the financial constraints we're operating under right now. And it is something we may well revisit. But if we do revisit it, we won't spend a lot of money on expensive premises. We'll do it a different way.
Now, what was the rationale, could you tell me, behind the launch of a 9 a.m. news and current affairs programme? Because it kind of falls between the two stools of breakfast television and breakfast news.
I started from the premise we've got a very successful radio programme, news programme, The Morning Ireland, which is also on News Now. If people want to see it on television, it's televised. We didn't then have any kind of TV news presence, if you like, through until the lunchtime news. So there was a definite gap there. There was also a question about, you know, what resources we had available to do it. And, you know, I mean, obviously one of the things we considered briefly was putting a breakfast programme on. But if you put a breakfast programme on, you have to have an overnight team. You have to man the studio much earlier in the morning. The costs ratcheted up very, very quickly. And I'm still not convinced there's a huge appetite necessary in Ireland to have that from RTE, because Morning Ireland is such a successful programme, whereas we did have a gap after that. And by starting Morning Edition at 9 o'clock, it means actually we could stretch the use of the studio, the new studio, across the day. So resource-wise, it's actually been relatively good value to deliver much, much cheaper than it would be to do a breakfast programme that starts at 7 in the morning. So that was part of the rationale. You know, I'm very pleased. It's been very well received. You know, I think we are offering something very different to TV3. That was the intention. We don't want to duplicate what they're doing. And, you know, I think it's good to have a news presence early in the morning.
RTE's Kevin Backhurst there. And remember, you can email us with your views on RTE, or indeed any media topic, on mediashow@rte.ie. Sticking with the need to foster investigative journalism, Mary Raftery, who died last year, was a tenacious force in Irish journalism, both in print, in magazines like McGill, and in RTE, in documentaries which broke ground on institutional child abuse, as well as her last work on the state of Irish mental hospitals. Since Mary's death, tragically far too young from cancer, her friend and colleague Sheila Ahern has worked to establish a fund to support investigative journalism. Sheila, tell me who's behind the fund and what's its intent.
When anybody dies, there's often left a vacuum, and people do want to, particularly when somebody dies so young, want to fill that in some way. And we all felt that Mary's legacy needed to be nurtured and extended. And a group of friends and family got together to look at how we could do that. And we felt that encouraging and supporting investigative journalism was the way to do it. The fund is currently supported by the One Foundation, a philanthropic group. And we've had three rounds so far. The third is open at the moment. We'll have applications in the next couple of weeks. But it's been fantastic. There's been a great response for the previous two rounds. The first was in relation to mental health. The last documentary series Mary worked on, Behind the Walls, looked at the history of psychiatric institutions. The second was about migrant issues. And the third will be about children's rights. So they're all areas that Mary would have worked on over her career in print and in broadcasting.
And Sheila, what is the state of health of investigative journalism in Ireland? Because there are still plenty of obstacles to investigative reporting.
There are. There were always obstacles, and there are new ones, new challenges at the moment because of the state of the economy. Journalists and broadcasters, whether it's in print or in broadcast media, are faced with having to turn over stories very, very quickly. They're tied to a desk. Their resources are Google, online and on the phone. And really, you can't investigate something just by using the internet and by using the phone. You need to get out and talk to people. It takes time, and it often doesn't give instant return. And papers need stories printed on a daily, on a weekly basis. And it's a real investment in time and money to allow journalists to go out and get out on the ground and go talk to people and find stories.
Now, we're talking in this episode about RTE post the Father Reynolds incident, which was something, I guess, that struck terror into every journalist's heart. Did the Father Reynolds report, the libel and the fallout from it, did that have a chilling effect on investigative journalism?
I think it's had a chilling effect on everybody. And the big lesson to learn, and it was something I learned working with Mary for so many years, everything absolutely has to be checked, double checked, triple checked. There was, you know, there was no end to the amount of checking you can do right up until transmission or print. We would have looked at everything. Now, things can go wrong, but with Mary, it never happened. We were never in a situation where we got it wrong. Sometimes we didn't have access to the same information that subsequently came out when we did States of Fear. We didn't have access to the archives of the religious orders, for example. We had access to the Department of Education archives. What we were saying, we knew to be true and factual because we had spoken to so many people and we had looked at the state records. And so when the Ryan report came out, there was that kind of nervousness. But as it turned out, everything was absolutely as Mary had said. But when you don't have access to all of the information, it can be very difficult and very nerve-wracking. You know, the bottom line, you know, check and double check.
So Sheila, where are your applications coming from? Are they coming from the established newspapers, broadcast outlets, or are these freelancers?
The applicants are from a very wide range of newspapers, freelance people who will be submitting pieces on a regular basis. I think the first piece to be published is from a regional newspaper. The fund isn't enormous. The maximum you can apply for is €18,000, which won't fund a television programme or a radio programme. But what it will do is give somebody the research time. So we've had independent radio journalists, we've had people from the Irish Times, people from the established papers and broadcasters as well. It's been very interesting. And students, some people who are fresh out of college, who have really good ideas and are burning with enthusiasm and energy to do the work, which is great.
And Sheila, the details there, in case people want to apply or find out more about it, is maryraftoryfund.ie. In this week's Media Watch, we look at media through the eyes of Hans Zomer of Docus, and questioning the media's take on global development.
Our research shows that people in Ireland give generously to overseas aid, but that many people think that aid isn't working. Now, there is overwhelming evidence that aid does work, but that message is not being heard. And this is, at least in part, because the media are not telling us. Media coverage of aid issues usually focuses on crises and disasters. The news tells us that Africa is a mess and dependent on aid. In our busy news agenda, there's often little scope for other stories. I'm wondering if many of you will have heard that several African economies have been among the fastest growing in the world, and have been so for the past decade. Or that one in three Africans are now living middle-class lives. It's not news, but it's very significant. As is, for instance, the fact that for the first time ever, 9 out of every 10 children on this earth are enrolled in primary schools. Did you know that in the past 20 years, 600 million people have been lifted out of poverty? That's over 100 times the population of Ireland. Surely that's news. Now, our news focus on the here and now means that we're not picking up on some of the bigger stories. Stories that aren't dramatic or sudden. Stories that can help us make sense of the world and help us make better decisions. Our prosperity here in Ireland depends on the prosperity of the rest of the world. Now, it's often been said that good news is no news, but good news deserves to be reported. So here's hoping that our media can help us tell the important and not just the urgent stories.
And that was Hans Zomer there. And if you want to take part in our Media Watch column, email us at mediashow@rte.ie. I'm Brenda Power, and you've been listening to The Media Show. Next week, why broadcasting needs new voices.
We want to be able to offer people the opportunity to get on air and to prove to the programme makers that they can widen their stable of contributors.
And Sunday Independent editor Anne Harris on the challenges to press freedom in Ireland. And remember, you can contact us on mediashow@rte.ie and listen back to the series along with additional content on rte.ie.